Morning. Today's daf and kedushin is Chaf Dal. Thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf as long as Zeichen Nishmat Liba Gabriela Bashmuel. We find ourselves on Chaf Gimel Amid Aleph. We are halfway in understanding the Mishnah. The Mishnah back on Chaf Beis Amid Beis started the topic of Eved Kenani. Eved Kenani is purchased. Eved Kenani is part of the estate now. Eved Kenani is passed on to the next generation. Eved Kenani is chayiv in the mitzvahs in the Torah. All the mitzvahs in the Torah that a woman is chayiv in. One additional point by the Eved Kenani, by the man, and that is he gets a bris mila. And with all that stated, the Eved Kenani is somewhere between a Jew and a non-Jew. He has status, he's chayv the mitzvos, not allowed to marry a Jew, neither an Eved Kenani or Shivcha Kenanis. Notable exception is the Eved Ivri. Eved Ivri could be put together with the Shivcha Kenanis, but otherwise it's an issur in the Torah for a man to marry either an Eved Kenani, for a woman to marry an Eved Kenani, for a man to marry a Shivcha. I say it right? A man to marry a Shivcha Kenanis and a woman to marry a Eved Kenani. Okay. Over the course of the Gemara yesterday, so how do you purchase an Eved Kenani? So one of three ways, Kesef Shtar Chazaka. We did the Gemara yesterday. The Gemara taught us a couple of other ways as well. Chalipin could be used to purchase an Eved Kenani. Mashiach could be used. A Masir, we didn't really discuss Masir yesterday. Okay, so anyway, so Chalipin could be used, Mashiach could be used, various ways in order to be Kona and Eved Kenani. How does he get out of it? So the Mishnah itself brought in two shitas. One is Rameir and the other is Chachamim. So Rameir and the Mishnah said that the way that he gets out of it is either using Kesef or Shtar. Now Kesef, Ayideh Acherim. Shtar, Ayideh Atzmo. That's the opinion of Rameir. Yesterday we had a little bit of difficulty understanding what exactly that meant. So if you remember, and this is where we ended off with yesterday in terms of the Shita Rameir, Rameir is of the opinion that the first assumption Rameir holds is that for an Eved Kenani to go free, it's not a zechus. Even though freedom is a wonderful thing, we're gonna celebrate freedom in 3 weeks from today, less than 3 weeks. Oh boy! So freedom is wonderful, but sometimes it isn't. But the Eved Kenani says Rav Meir, it's not absolutely zechus. It's not there's obviously it's good, but it's not an absolute zechus. And there's a little bit of chovah, as we explained yesterday. Eved Kenani enjoys if he's owned by a Kohen, he's going to enjoy the truma, and even if he's not owned by a Kohen, he's going to enjoy the carefree life that he lives, specifically in terms of Ishus, in terms of the women in his life. It'll be just a little bit easier for him, a little more carefree for him. So it won't necessarily be a good thing. So the Gemara says, so that is an explanation of the Mishnah. When it comes to Shtar, so according to Rav Meir, so you can't do the Shtar, someone cannot accept the Shtar on his behalf, because Ein Chavon La'adam Shelo B'fanav. So what about Mamon? So Mamon's different. Mamon can be done even against his will. Now why should that be? So that we had a discussion, and then this is what we ended off yesterday, a discussion between Abai and Rava, exactly why Mamon should be different. Abai basically takes a look at the Mamon and says, you know, when it comes to money, look, money got him into the slavery against his will, so money could do the same as well. Get him out of the slavery even against his will. Now, it's true that Shtar doesn't work that way, but as Abai explains yesterday, yeah, of course Shtar doesn't work that way. Because when it comes to Shtar, it's not the same document. What's one document getting him in versus one document getting him out? When it comes to money, it's the same money. Money is a standardized item. So it's a constant. So money can get him in against his will, so money can get him out of against his will as well. That's the way Abai explained to Rava. A different formulation in terms of what the basic difference is. Rava says you have to look at who the recipient is. When it comes to money, who is the recipient of the money? The owner. The owner is the recipient of the money. So if the owner is receiving the money in order for him to gain his freedom, what difference does it make whether he knows about it, whether he doesn't know about it? But when it comes to shtar, who is the recipient of the shtar? Ultimately, he's the recipient of the shtar. So if he's going to be the recipient of the shtar, he has to know about it. Okay. Various ways in terms of how to understand the differentiation between kesef and shtar, but that is the shita of Rav Meir. And that's where we ended off yesterday. So now we have an understanding of the shita of Rav Meir, that if it comes to money, so money can be used to release even if he doesn't know about it. When it comes to shtar, he must know about it. That is how we understand Rav Meir of the Mishnah. We're continuing now where we left off yesterday, right in the middle of Chav Gimel Amud Aleph. little more than halfway, half of the way down on the Amud, the Chachamim Amrim Bekesef Ayidei Atzma. So the Chachamim say Kesef Ayidei Atzma. Now, the Gemara says, what is going on over here? Now again, going into this Gemara, we now know that the Chachamim are going to take the other side of the issue, which is freedom for Neve Kanani must be a good thing, and only good thing. And this was a debate that we had in the back in the Gemara in Gittin. And this machlokas and Rameir and the Chachamim are complementary to the machlokas back we saw in Gittin. So the Chachamim are of the opinion that the emancipation of an Neve Kanani is only a good thing, and therefore Zachon L'Adam Shalal B'Fanav. So the Gemara says Kesef Ayidei Atzma. So the Gemara says, Bekesef Ayidei Atzma in Ayidei Achirim Lo. Amai Nihinam Edishlo Midat Omechti Shamar La Rabban and Darmi Zechusu Sheyetzim Mitachas Yad Rabo Lecheirus. So again, going in, we know that the Chachamim's opinion is that it's a zchus vitanina, and on top of that, we also know the Mishnah. There's a Mishnah in Gittin. Zachla Adam Shlo Befanav Ein Chavan Lo Ela Befanav. So you could create a zchus for somebody, and you don't need his knowledge or consent. So v'chite mama yidei atzma af ayidei atzma. So the Gemara says, okay, so we're going to have to read the following into the Mishnah. It says ayidei atzma. We'll just add a word, an important word, af ayidei atzma. Meaning, of course, it doesn't matter who's the one doing it, whether it's the Eved Kanani or somebody else. If somebody's going to sponsor his freedom, that's a good thing, and you could do it without his consent. So the Gemara says, and what the Chachamim are interested in teaching us in the Mishnah is the following: you can give money to an Eved Kanani, meaning. We know the general rules, Mashikana Eved Kana Rabba. Whatever the Eved acquires, the owner automatically goes to the owner. And what the Chachamim are teaching us is you can throw in an exclusion. You can say, I'm going to give you the money. You say the Eved Kanani to the exclusion of your owner. And that works. And that's what the Chachamim want to teach us. Gemara says, Yahachi Ema Seifa. So the Gemara says, that's all well and good. Let's go on to the next part of the Mishnah, which reads, Bishtar Yidechem Velo Yidei Atzmo. When it comes to shtar, it can be done ayidechem, but not through himself. So the Gemara says, "What are you talking about?" Now we know gita v'yada b'im keechad, which means that of course you give him the shtar. Now right now he doesn't have a hand, literally a hand, and figuratively a handle. He doesn't have one, but it comes together. With his freedom, he gets his hand. With his hand, he gets his freedom. And they happen concurrently. So the Gemara says, so I don't understand. Hand him the shtar and he should be free. So the Gemara says, okay. So maybe by shtar, what it means is, of course somebody else can accept the shtar on his behalf, but and af. And he too can also accept the shtar on his behalf. So the Gemara says, so now, here's how we're reading the Chachamim. When it comes to Kesef, so who could be the contributor of the Kesef for him in order to free him? And the answer is going to be anybody, either himself or others. When it comes to Shtar, who could receive the Shtar on his behalf? The answer is anybody, either him or somebody else. Now what comes out is, if you really want to express what the opinion of the Chachamim are, you know what it is? It's very simple. Kesef and Shtar works, Bein Ayidei Atzma, Bein Ayidei Achirim. Now that was an easy way to say it. And the Mishnah didn't do that. And the Gemara is asking exactly that question. Now, arvinu v'nisninu b'kesef u'bishtar bein ayidei achirim bein ayidei atzmo. And why didn't the Mishnah say that? Because it's just such an easy way to say it. And usually the Mishnah chooses the easiest formulation of how to say a halacha. So the Gemara says, Ela b'kesef bein ayidei achirim bein ayidei atzmo. So the Gemara says, okay. So here's what we're going to have to say. When it comes to kesef can be done either through him or through somebody else. B'shtar ayidei achirim v'lo ayidei atzmo. Now when it comes to shtar, it can only be done ayidei achirim, but it cannot be done ayidei atzmo. Fascinating. What we're now going to be introduced to is the idea that there is a shita, there's a tana, Not one that we subscribe to halachically, but there is a Tana who doesn't buy into this idea of Gita V'yad Abayim Ke'echad. There is a Tana out there. And that's what the Mishnah is teaching us. That when it comes to Shtar is only can be received by somebody else. The Eved Kanani cannot receive his freedom, according to this Tana. We'll identify him in just a moment. The Eved Kanani cannot receive his freedom by actually accepting the shtar himself. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, Ditanya, the Gemara says, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, Omer, Af Bishtar, Al Yedei Achem, Velo Al Yedei Atzmo. According to Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, it can only accept a shtar only when somebody else is the recipient of a shtar on his behalf. He physically can. He halachically can't receive the shtar on his own. And then the Gemara ends off by saying, V'shash machlokas bedavar. And then when you go through a Mishnah, you're going to uncover now, not just two shitas, but really the three shitas. As I mentioned yesterday, when you read the Mishnah, you don't know this. You literally have no idea that there's a third shita incorporated in the Mishnah. But now that we are really struggling in terms of understanding the language of the Mishnah, so basically what we're going to do is we're going to do a little bit of surgery, and that we're going to take that shita, the Chachamim, and we're going to splice it. And that's going to break down into two positions. The first position is that Kesef and Shtar works across the board, Bein La'atzmon, Bein La'acherim. And then there's a third shita in the Mishnah, kind of tucked away at the end, which is that by Shtar, it makes a difference whether it's him or somebody else. For the Eved Kenani himself, he can't accept the Shtar. For others, they can accept the Shtar on his behalf. Why should that be? Because there is a Tana out there that doesn't subscribe to the idea of Gita V'yadaman Ke'echad. That's how the Gemara concludes in terms of how to understand the Mishnah. To which the Gemara says, Amar Rabba, my time of the Reb Shimon ben Elazar. Now, this is an interesting Shita. Again, we don't hold like this Shita, but it's interesting. And what's the basis of it? How can it be that the Eved Kenani cannot go free by handing the Shtar to him himself? So the Gemara says, Gamar Lala Mi'isha. Gemara says, the Limud is fascinating. Because we learn it based on the Gzeirah Shavah, that the halachas of Eved Kenani are going to follow the halachas of Gittin. Meaning they both are going to be freed through a divorce document. Through a document. Now, this is where it gets fascinating. Let's think about a woman. It's very simple. You write a get, and what do you do with the get? You hand it to the woman. So if the woman is the model in terms of how does she accept her freedom, it's very simple. You hand the get to her. And now watch what's going to happen. We're going to take the same conceptual premise and move it now over to Eved Kenani. What's happening in Eved Kenani? Fascinating. What you're going to do is you're going to hand it, but not to the Eved Kenani, for reasons which we're about to articulate. So it's so funny, it's interesting, how the Gemara is now making a limud, and you think, well, the model is teaching us that you hand it to the recipient who's going to gain his freedom, and the Gemara is about to explain, according to Rav Shimon ben Elazar, which again, I'm going to say, it's not the halacha, but it's just interesting, but according to Rav Shimon ben Elazar, the model is going to teach us that the Eved Kenani cannot receive the get. How do we get there? Ma isha ashiyotz get l'rishusheinu shalom, av evanami ashiyotz get l'rishusheinu shalom. The Gemara says, here's how we're going to get there. When it comes to a woman, so he's handing the get over to somebody that does not belong to him. We've said time and again, he does not own the woman. There's no ownership of the woman. It's a marriage. It's a relationship. We're severing the relationship. He's taking the document and he's handing it to the woman. He no longer is the owner of the document. She's the owner of the document. So you see that in the world of get. In order to facilitate the efficacy of the get, you must hand it to somebody that is no longer in your domain. And that's exactly what happens. The same thing has to happen by Eved Kenani. You have to give it to somebody who's not in your domain. You see, every single time you hand it to the Eved Kenani, it just basically comes back to you. It's no different than taking it from your right pocket and putting it into your left pocket. And Eved Kenani you own. Mashakana Eved Kana Rabo. So what you have to do is you have to hand the get to somebody that is totally out of your domain. That is, according to Rav Shimon ben Elazar, the reason why you can't hand it to your Eved Kenani. Okay. Bye, Rabo. Question. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Now again, it's one of those times in the Gemara where we know it's not the halacha. We don't follow him, but it's Torah. It's a shita. It's in the corpus of Torah. So even if we analyze a shita that is not lahalacha, it's still a function of Talmud Torah. So the Gemara wants to know, according to Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, Eved Kenani Maushi Yaser Shliach Lekabel Gito Miyad Rabo. So according to Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, can Eved Kenani appoint another Eved Kenani?
The one who accepts it for the shliach.
Yeah, the one who accepts it. Can he appoint a shliach in order to accept his get shechur? Now, mind you, the Gemara is asking the question of appointment of shliach. I mean, according to Rav Shimon ben Elazar, you need another person involved in order for shtar to work. It's not going to work without another person. So the idea over here can't be, well, shliach is going to make it worse. It can't make it worse. Excuse me. The general question of the Gemara is that can the Eved Kanani actually assign agency on something that he himself cannot do? Okay. So, Kevin the Gemara la Isha Bisha. So I'm sorry, Ki Isha. So on one hand, once again, the model of where we know this whole idea from comes from Isha and how she receives a divorce. Now she can set up a shliach. Odilma Isha di matzah mekabelas gita shliach na mematzah meshavia. Eved di iu lo mekabel gita shliach na mematzah meshavia. So the Gemara says now on the other hand, again, we are stuck with the basic distinction that a woman can accept her get, her own get, therefore she can appoint a shliach. And Eved Kanani, according to Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, cannot accept his own get shechur, so therefore he can't appoint a shliach. So Basa Dabaya Hada Pasha, the Gemara says, La la mi isha ki isha. So the Gemara says, okay. And the answer, although we asked the question, the answer is, he can appoint a shliach. Ve'ala hadam Rav Huna Bered Rav Yeshua. So the Gemara says, okay. Basically, the Gemara is kind of like setting us up now for a question which the Gemara asked already a couple times throughout Shas. We've seen this most recently back in Adarim. The Gemara is going to ask the question once again, and it goes like this. So the Gemara says, when it comes to Kohanim, they are acting, they are working in the Beis HaMikdash, they are doing the Avoda. Now, on one hand, it is our carbon, meaning we're the ones bringing the carbon to the Beis HaMikdash. And on the other hand, they are doing the avoda, obviously, as a mitzvah of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. They're acting on behalf of, now finish the sentence. They're acting on behalf of, you have two choices. Either us, meaning we're giving them the karban, so they're our agent, or no. They're acting on behalf of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. In other words, they're serving as his agent. Now again, what did we just learn in the Gemara? We just learned in the Gemara that if you can't do something, you can't appoint an agent to do that. Now, you and I'm speaking to the non-Kohanim in this room, so you and I can't do the Avoda. So we can't do the Avoda, so the Kohanim cannot be a Shliach of ours. How could we appoint a Shliach to do something that we ourselves cannot do? The Isa Kedach of the Gemara makes exactly this point. Isa Kedach Shluch Edidan, Eno Mi'ika Mididana Lomatzinan Avdinan, Ve'inu Matzi Avde. So the Gemara says, okay, so they can't be our shliach, they must be a shliach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. In this particular case, what difference does it make? Meaning, it's a nice question, it's good to think about, but you know, all questions have to be asked, but also, there's got to be some ramification. Tosfos is bothered by that. Tosfos says, well, I'll give you a simple example. Let's say the kohen in question, I'm so broigus with that kohen, who I just gave my carbon to, that I previously made a neder, that I'm not going to get any benefit from him whatsoever. Okay, so Tosfos says, under those circumstances, now it's important to know the answer to our question. If he's serving as my shliach, so then I said I wasn't going to get benefit from him. So he can't act on my behalf. If I made a neder, then I'm not getting any benefit from him. If he's serving as a shliach of a Kadosh Baruch Hu, so despite the fact that we are right now not on the best of terms, but he can. In other words, he's not my shliach, he's a Kadosh Baruch Hu shliach. He's simply just doing his job, so to say. So the Gemara says, okay, that would be the practical difference between who shliach he would be. So to which the Gemara says, v'lo v'avda di'iu lo matzi mekabel gita v'shliach matzi mashve. So the Gemara says, now, you just said that when it comes to Kohanim, they can't be our shliach. Of course they can't be, because they're doing something that we ourselves cannot do. So they can't be our shliach, they're the shliach of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Gemara says, okay, but contrast that to what we just learned a moment ago. Then when it comes to an Eved Kanani, even though he can't accept the get, he can make it, according to Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, he can make a shliach in order to accept the get. So the Gemara says that we just ran into a brick wall. So to which the Gemara says, Velohi. Yisrael lo shaykh b'toros karbanos klal, Eved shaykh b'gitin. So the Gemara says that there's still going to be a fundamental difference. I, a non-Kohen, have no shaychus to karbanos. I cannot go into the Beis HaMikdash, I cannot do the Avoda. I am perfectly excluded from the whole process of Avoda. Yes, it's true. I can do the shechita. Shechita bazar is kosher. But after that point in time, I can have no involvement. In fact, any involvement that I have after that point in time passes the whole process. I simply have no relevancy in the Beis HaMikdash doing the avodah. When you're talking about Eved Kenani, he's not mufka. He's not perfectly removed from the whole process of get. Nitanya, the Gemara quotes the Braisa. Near no drum shavim mekabel gito shel chavero miyad rabo shel chavero. Avalo miyad rabo shelo. In fact, and this is why I stumbled in the beginning of the question, an Eved Kenani can accept a get on behalf of another Eved Kenani. Oh. And because, according to Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, the only thing that's blocked is you receiving your own shtar shechor. You can receive somebody else's shtar shechor. That's not a problem. So the Gemara comes out from the Gemara is that there's an obvious difference and a basic difference between a non-kohen to the karbanos and an Eved Kenani to get. A non-kohen to the karbanos, perfectly excluded from the whole process. An Eved Kenani to a get, not perfectly excluded. And so the Gemara says that's the basic difference. Okay. So the Gemara says, now, according to the Chachamim, the Eved Kenani can use money in order to trigger his release. The money can't be his. The money has to be somebody else's. Okay. Name and Bahakim Iflagi, the Rameir Savra, and Kenyan Leve below Rambo. The Enkinyan Lisha below Bala. So the Gemara says, I think now we're going to explain the Machlokas, and it's very simple. According to Rav Meir, you physically and halachically cannot hand money to an Eved Kenani on his own. An Eved Kenani, as well as a wife to her husband as well, but again, they're different. But in this halacha, they're the same. The moment I hand money to an Eved Kenani, it immediately goes to the owner. And it doesn't matter what I say. The money's not his, it's yours. It doesn't matter. According to Rav Meir, automatically it goes to the owner. And Rabbanan Sarva Yesh Kenya Leve Bela Rabo, Vyesh Kenya Lisha Bela Bala. And according to the Chachamim, no. It's possible to give a gift to an Eved Kenani and to a wife to the exclusion of their owner, husband, respectively. So, Amar Rabba, Amar Shesha Tukuli, Amar Yen Kenya Leve Bela Rabo, Vyen Kenya Lisha Bela Bala. So, Rav Sheshes will tell you, you don't have to say that. Let's not go to the extremes. Let's say that both Tanayim, in our Mishnah, both Rabbi and the Chachamim say that you cannot hand money to either an Eved Kenani or to a woman, and it be to the exclusion of their master and husband, respectively. But what I can do is I can go over and say, this is a mana. Here's a bit of cash, and al menas on the condition shein l'rabcha rishos bo. Rameir savar ki amar le kani eved v'kani rabbe. So v'yichi amar le al menas lo klom kamar le. So according to Rameir, so you stipulated. You stipulated. Rameir says that was very nice of you that you stipulated. It meant nothing. According to Rameir, not only is the money de facto going to go to the owner, and if you give it to a wife, de facto goes to the husband, even with a stipulation, it does not help. V'rabbanan Savri came into Amar Leh, Amanasa, Hanileh, Tanai. And the Chachamim are of the opinion that the Amanas does work. Meaning that without the words Amanas, we're all in agreement. Money goes to the Eved Kenani, money immediately goes to the owner. Money goes to the wife, it immediately goes to her husband. That's, everyone's in agreement. What is up for discussion and debate is if you make a condition. Rav Meir says it doesn't help, and the Chachamim says it does help. Now, V'Rav Elazar Amar, I'm sorry, so that's Rav Sheshes' understanding of how to understand the Machlokas and Amisha between Rav Meir and the Chachamim. Okay. V'Rav Elazar Amar Koki, I gamna dekulam lo pligi dekani Eved v'kani rabbe. And Rav Elazar will take a different take on our Mishnah. Truth be told is that even with a Tanai, it's not going to help. And everyone's in agreement with that. So you hand money to an Eved Kenani, immediately goes to his owner. You hand money to a wife, it immediately goes to her husband. And even with a Tanai, still same is going to happen. V'hachah b'may skinan kigon, da'aknilei echad mana, v'amrlei, amanash shetetze bo, l'cheiras. So now here's what you're going to do. You're going to give the Eved Kenani money, not on the condition that it belongs to him, because it doesn't. Because it can't. And the moment that it goes to him, the moment that he acquires it, immediately is acquired by the owner. And even with a stipulation, that would be true as well. What's open for discussion, however, is the following. I'm giving money to the Eved Kenani, and I earmark the money. and I tell the Eved Kanani, this is money for your freedom. It's not yours, because the moment it's yours, it immediately goes to your owner, but it's earmarked for you. It's not to you, but for you. So Rav Meir said, "V'chiyamar le kani kani aved v'kani rabbe v'chiyamar le amanas lo klum kamar le." Now here's where now the disagreement exists between the Rav Meir and the Chachamim. According to Rav Meir, by you saying that didn't help. What does it doesn't matter? Lamaisa, you're giving money to the Eved Kanani. He acquires it, and automatically it goes to the owner. And Rabban Zavrei lidide nami. And according to the Chachamim, this would work. Because you're not giving money to the Eved Kanani. You're giving money for the Eved Kanani. You're earmarking the money and you're saying, this is going to be for your freedom.
Escrow?
Yeah, something, yeah, exactly. And you're right. And you're going to be holding it for you. Right.
What does he make a kinyan?
Huh?
And
the kinyan will be made when that money goes to the owner. In other words, the money then is going to be handed to the owner, and the Eved Kanani never actually owned the money. All he did was just simply hold the money and on behalf of himself. But he never owned it, because the moment he owns it, immediately goes to the owner. Okay, so, and that says Rav Elazar, is the machlokes between Rav Meir and the Chachamim. So, let's just quickly summarize. In our Mishnah, we have a machlokes between Rav Meir and the Chachamim, whether it's kesef ha'idei atzma, kesef ha'idei acherim. According to Rav Meir, it's only kesef ha'idei acherim. According to the Chachamim, it's kesef ha'idei atzma. And where does the machlokes lie between the two? So we could say it in one of three ways. The Gemara's proposed suggestion, which is, it's just a fundamental debate in terms of whether or not you can give money to an Eved Kanani to the exclusion of the owner. Rav Meir says no, Chachamim say yes. Or Rav Sheshes, you have to verbally stipulate that the money goes to the Eved Kanani, not to the owner. Rav Meir says the stipulation doesn't help. The Chachamim says it does. Or Rav Elazar's explanation, which is, even with a stipulation, it's not going to help. Money immediately goes to the owner. What you're going to have to do is give it to the Eved Kanani and say, this is not given to you, but it's given for you. Meaning you're just going to hold it, and this money will serve as your kesef cheres, which you're going to give to the owner, but it's not yours. You're just simply holding on to it. Where according to Rav Meir, even that's not going to help. And the Chachamim say, no, that would help. Okay. We are continuing the Gemara. We are on the bottom of Chaf Gimel Amud Beis. Virami deramer deramer virami derabana derabana. We now seem to be having an inconsistency between the Shitas, and the Gemara goes on to explain. We're now on the very top of Chaf Dal Amud Alf. Today's daf in Isha Poda Meister Sheni Bilo Chomish. A woman does not redeem her Meister Sheni without adding on a fifth. Meister Sheni, in years 1, 2, 4, 5 of the Shemitah cycle, the first 10% every year, 1 through 6, is given to the Levi. That's called Meister Rishon. Then you have to take off another 10% from your produce and do what with it? In years 1, 2, 4, and 5, you take that second 10% of fruit and principally collect it, march to Yerushalayim, and eat the fruit in Yerushalayim. This is what's called Meister Sheni. That is principally what you should do. Practically, every single time you have a harvest, you're going to walk to Yerushalayim. I mean, you're going there three times a year, I understand. But every single time you're going to have a harvest, the Torah understands that, practically speaking, it's just impractical. So here's what you're going to do. You're going to redeem the Kedushas Meister Sheni onto money. Okay. When redeeming the Kedushas Meister Sheni onto money, so the Torah puts a surcharge. If you, the owner, are redeeming your own Meister Sheni, you have to take the money equivalent to the produce that you have and add on another 25%. A surcharge for redeeming your own Meister Sheni. However, if you're sponsoring somebody else's redemption, so you only have to redeem it at a dollar for dollar. And there's no surcharge when you're redeeming somebody else's Meister Sheni. And this is the idea behind Chomish. So Chomish makes the big distinction is whether you're redeeming your own Meister Sheni or you're redeeming somebody else's Meister Sheni. The Torah says Chomish, Okay, you're following. The Torah says Chomesh. Chomesh, the way the Torah always figures fractions, is after the sum total. So in other words, it's if I let's say $100, so it comes out to 125, not 120. Because what's the fifth of 125? 25. So the Chomesh is after it's been added on. Okay, it's just so every time the Torah gives you a fraction, so if you want to figure it out, it's a nice trick, it's a neat trick. All you do is take the denominators, take one off the denominator. It works every single time. So if the Torah says a chomish and you want to figure out how much you have to pay surcharge, so instead of a fifth, figure a quarter. Okay, a quarter of 100 is 25. Add that on. Now you have 125. What's the fifth of 125? 25. Yes.
What prevents people from taking other people's Meister Sheni instead of theirs?
Yeah, correct. In other words, it would be a nice legal loophole. Solution. Right. In other words, if I don't want to pay the surcharge, I'll go to my neighbor. Yeah, you're right. I'll go to my neighbor and I'll say, I'll redeem yours and you'll redeem mine. And somehow, somewhere in the back of my mind, that's a discussion somewhere.
Yes.
Yeah, right. I don't remember where. You'll forgive me. But yes. Okay. I understand. I told you every Jew is an accountant by heart. So it's like we're hardwired that way. And yes, it would seem to be that's effective. Okay. And my other really dumb theory in life is that every Jew is really a restaurant owner by heart. In other words, we're hardwired to want to open up a restaurant, even though it's, you know. But we're all hardwired that way. Okay. Those are my two dumb theories of life. Let's learn Torah. Okay. So the Ein Isha Poda Meister Sheni Below Chamish. Look at Rashi, the top of the Amud, Chavdal Amud Aleph. What are we thinking right now in terms of what's going on in this Mishnah? Kasakadacha Meister Sheni Shumis De Baala Shehi Kabala Vikarina Le Mi Masur Kizim Afarshva Leva Azel. What do we think right now? We think right now is as follows. It's not her property, it's her husband's property. And what she's doing is from her money, seemingly, she's taking and she's redeeming the Meister Sheni of her husband. And what the Mishnah here in Meister Sheni is telling us is that whose is it? It's really her money, but and the property belongs to her husband, but it's really one and the same. Meaning it's all considered one basic pocket. And so therefore, once again, if I'm sponsoring somebody else's Meister Sheni, if I'm redeeming somebody else's, so then I don't have to pay the surcharge. If I have to redeem my own, I do have to pay the surcharge. That's where we're standing right now in terms of the going into this Mishnah. Here's what we think. Now, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar Omer, Mishum Rabbi Meir, second time today, Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar. Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar says, in the name of Rabbi Meir, Isha po de Meister Sheni below Chomish. No, a woman, when she is redeeming the Meister Sheni of her husband, does not have to add the surcharge. Now, here we go. What is going on over here in this Mishnah? Hey Chidami. Ile Mabazuzi Debaal Umaisa Debaal. So, wait a second. Is what's going on over here that it's the husband's property and it's the husband's money? Shlichusa Debaal Ka'avda. So, all she's doing is basically agency. How can there be an opinion out there that says that she doesn't have to add the surcharge? Of course, she would have to add the surcharge. It's her husband's property, it's her husband's money. Of course, you have to add a chomesh when you're redeeming the Meister Sheni. There can't be any other way to look at it. So, in order to understand that there's a machlokes, we have to fiddle a little bit with the mitzias, with the ukimta. Ella bezuze dida umeiser dide. So the Gemara says it's her money and it's his meiser, and there is the machlokes. So to which the Gemara says, really, ish amarachmana velo isha. And the way Rashi understands it is that although in other areas of halacha we say ishto kegufo, and we say that the man and the woman are really one corporate entity. That's how we, in other areas of halacha, that's true. But by Meister Sheni, however, the Gemara says it's simply not true. A woman and a man and his wife are two different accounts as it relates to Meister Sheni. And if the woman is using her money, and she can have money, if the woman is using her money in order to redeem her husband's Meister Sheni, so then that's considered being redeemed by an outsider. It's not an insider, it's an outsider. And this is the way Rashi explains the Gemara. Admittedly, Tosfos doesn't learn the Gemara this way, but for our purposes, this is how we're going to say over the Gemara. So they're considered two separate entities. So once again, there wouldn't be a debate on this issue. So I'm sorry, Loisha. Ella lav ki hai gavna. So the Gemara says, in order to understand that what the debate is going on in this Mishnah, Maaser Sheni, here's what's going on. It's actually a Tosefta Maaser Sheni, but I just said that for purpose of correctness. Anyway, ki hai gavna da'akni le acher mana v'amr la amenas shetifti bo es ha'maiser. So here's what is going on in this Mishnah. She is not using her money. She was given money by somebody else and said that this money is going to be given to you for the purpose of redeeming the Maaser Sheni. And now what the Gemara is thinking is that here's really what is at the core of the debate between Rav Meir and the Chachamim. When I give money to the wife of a husband, is that money immediately and automatically go to the husband? Or no, does she get the money? Now, if that's the way to understand the machlokas, what just happened in that Mishnah? We have two opinions in the Mishnah. We have the Chachamim, we have Rav Meir. The Chachamim say that she has to add on the 25% surcharge. Why? Because it's not her money. Money's given to her by an outsider, automatically go to the husband. Rav Meir says that she doesn't have to pay the surcharge. Why? Because it's her money. It's her money redeeming her husband's Maaser Sheni. And again, in the world of Maaser Sheni, they are two separate entities. If it's her money redeeming her husband's Maaser Sheni, she doesn't have to pay the surcharge. And this is exactly the opposite of how we learned Rav Meir and the Chachamim earlier this morning. Rav Meir and the Chachamim earlier this morning said, according to Rav Meir, there is no way for a woman to accept money to the exclusion of her husband. It simply doesn't work. All money is given to the wife, immediately go to the husband, according to Rav Meir. And the Chachamim say, no, you can give money to a woman to the exclusion of her husband. And now in this Mishnah, the Maaser Sheni, the way we're setting it up comes out to be the exact opposite. So Amar Abaye, Epoch. So Abaye says, okay, what we just learned in this Tosefta, you're going to have to flip it. And by the way, that was a good reason why I made the clarification. It's a Tosefta, not a Mishnah. Since it's a Tosefta, so therefore it's a little more malleable. And so therefore we have a problem. We have a problem aligning a Braisa, this Tosefta, and our Mishnah. So what we'll do is we'll just simply take the Tosefta and we'll flip it around. Okay. Rav Amar lo olam lo tepach, and Rav says, let's not do that. Let's leave the Tosefta as it is. And what we're going to do now is we're going to give just simply a different ukimta in the Tosefta, and therefore it's not going to have any bearing on our discussion, and so therefore there's no issue of an inconsistency between the Mishnah and the Tosefta. Rav says, lo olam lo tepach, don't flip it around. V'hacha b'maiser da'asami bei nasha askinan. And here's what happened. He had a married couple, husband and wife. Wife's father died, leaving an estate. Included in the estate was Maaser Sheni. Now, Maaser Sheni money. Now, the Ramele Tami de Amar, Maaser, could it be the one? Maaser Sheni money. So, the Ramele Tami de Amar, Maaser Mamon Hekdeshu. And here's where it gets interesting. Now, Maaser Sheni. Again, what are the rules? What are the parameters of Maaser Sheni? You take it, you bring it to Yerushalayim, you eat in Yerushalayim. Okay. Is it like, your two options are basically as follows. Is it like a karbon? Now, what's the story with the karbon? You take it to Yerushalayim, to the base of Mikdash, you shecht it, and you eat it. But the karbon's not yours. Meaning what you have is a right to eat the carbon, but it's not yours. You can't go over to a woman with a carbon and say, I want to be Mekarshi with the carbon. It's not yours. You don't have ownership over it. So on one hand, the Maaser Sheni could be viewed as a carbon. Even though, again, it's produce, I understand, but still, you could view the Kedusha of Maaser Sheni like a carbon. Or, on the other hand, the argument you can make is that really Maaser Sheni is yours. But it just simply has restrictions in terms of where and when you can eat it. Well, not really when, but where. And that is, you have to eat it within Yerushalayim. But fundamentally, it's yours. And this question of whether or not Maaser Sheni is Mamon Gavoa or Zechulin is really subject to a Machlokas Tanayim. And now what the Gemara is going to say is, that's what's going on over here. The wife's father passed away, leaving for his daughter Maaser Sheni. And now, does that Maaser Sheni immediately go to the husband? Because again, any monies that go into the woman during the marriage immediately go to the husband. Part of the part of the quid pro quo, the institution that the Chachamim made regarding marriage. Now, if Maaser Sheni is really a Hekdesh, the answer is going to be no. It's not going to go to the husband.
How does it go to the wife?
Mammon goes to the husband.
How does it go to the wife then?
It goes to the wife because it's she's responsible for it. She has to care for it.
But it's not her.
Correct. Correct. So the Gemara says, So Rameir Latame, the Amr Maiser Mammon Hekdeshu. Velo Kanli Ban, therefore the husband doesn't acquire. Verabon Latamehu, the Amr Mammon Hejudhu. Vikanile Baal, Hilkosh Lichusa Debal Kaavde. The Gemara says, that could be what the Mishnah Maiser Sheni is describing. If it's true, if that's right, so then there's no longer an inconsistency between this Tosefta regarding Maiser Sheni versus our Mishnah. Everything would then be fine. Okay. Tana. We are now on Chavdal Amin Aleph, we're towards the bottom of the Amud. It's a short Amud. And now we're up to the discussion of, there really is another way for an Eved Kenani to go free. Mm-hmm. Meaning in the Mishnah gave us two ways an Eved Kenani goes free. One is Kesef and the other is Shtar. With all the details of who's the recipient of the Kesef, who's the recipient of the Shtar, who's the sponsor of the Kesef, who's the recipient of the Shtar, etc., etc. Which was most of today's daf. And now, there really is another way for an Eved Kenani to go free, and that is a loss of an eye or the loss of a tooth. And as we're going to learn in just a moment, the loss of any extremity. Okay, which we'll talk more about as we go through this. A simple question, which the Gemara really doesn't ask, but let's ask it. How come the Mishnah didn't mention it? Meaning the Mishnah is going through all the ways that an Eved Kenani goes free, and when we're talking about how to acquire an Eved Kenani, so the Mishnah talked about Kesef, Shtar, Chazaka, although admittedly, the Mishnah did leave out Chalip and Meshicha, but when talking about the exit of an Eved Kenani from his owner, and him receiving his freedom, so the Mishnah goes over Kesef and Shtar, but the Mishnah doesn't mention Shein V'ayin, which by the way, is in the Torah. Shein V'ayin is a pasuk in the Torah. How come the Mishnah didn't mention it? So Tosus points out, could be that the Mishnah didn't mention it because, according to some Tanaim, which we're going to see in just a moment, even after his tooth gets knocked out, he still needs a shtar. Meaning, Shein V'ayin will be the cause of his freedom, but it won't be the actual mechanism that provides him his freedom. It's still going to have to be a shtar. So, and the Mishnah was only talking about Kinyanim. How does the owner acquire the Eved Kenani? How does the Eved Kenani actually acquire himself? So Tosafot says that could be a reason why our Mishnah doesn't mention Shein V'ayin. Yosef Shein V'ayin, Virashe Evarim She'enam Chozrim. The Brisa says that if the owner were to knock out his tooth or his eye or any extremity that does not grow back, so the Eved Kenani now has gained his freedom. Now, Bishlam Shein V'ayin Ksive. So the Gemara says, now Shein V'ayin, that's the pasuk in the Torah. Ela Rashi Evarim Minalan. So, but okay. Where do we get this idea that if the owner of the Eved Kenani would knock out any one of his extremities, knock out a finger, so the Eved Kenani goes free? Where did that come from? So Dumi the Shein V'ayin, Ma Shein V'ayin, Momin Shebegalu Ve'enu Chozrim, Avkom Mimun Shebegalu Ve'enu Chozrim. So the Gemara says, well, Shein V'ayin are examples, and they serve as a model of these are things that an Eved Kenani will go free, and anything like these. To which the Gemara says, can we slow down for just a moment? So the Gemara says, well, don't we have the rule that anytime the Torah gives us more than one example, they are now no longer the rule, but they're rather the exception? That's the principle of Shnei Ksuvim. So the Gemara says, no. A Torah could not have written one without the other. They both necessarily have to be written. The ikas rechman shein hava mina filu shein chalav. If the Torah would have said shein, I might have thought that shein meant your baby tooth. Right, it's very nice the way the Gemara described it. Right, the tooth of milk. Right, it's the tooth when you know you drink a lot of milk. It's your baby tooth. So the kazer rechman ayin. That's why the Torah had to write I, to make sure that we knew we're not talking about a baby tooth. We're talking about something that you will have for most of your adult life. Okay. Just like the eye. That's right. Now, kazer rechmana ayin. V'kazer rechmana ayin hava mina ma'ayin shenivra imo av kol shenivra imo aval shein lo tzrich lo. So, but in the Gemara says, now if the Torah would have just written eye and not tooth, I might have thought, Well, it's different. You're born with the eye. You're not born with your teeth. So therefore, tzricha. I mean, I understand. They're not visible, but they're not visible. So tzricha. So therefore, the Gemara says, that's why the Torah needs to write both. Ve'ema ki yake klal shein v'ayin prak klal apran in b'chal amashe b'pran. Shein v'ayin in midech rin alo. The Gemara says, well, can't you read the Torah by a simple methodology of klal and prat? And if that's true, we know, ein she b'chal el amashe b'pran. These two are the only definitional items on the Evah Kenani's body where if it's knocked out, he's going to go free. And nothing else. So the Gemara says, L'chafshi yishachenu chazer v'klal. So the Gemara says, yeah, but if you read on the Pasuk, it says, L'chafshi yishachenu, which is now another generality. And so what do we have? Klal uprat uklal. Iyat adan elakein aprat. Ma aprat mefurish mom shebegaloi v'ena chazrim. Afkom mom shebegaloi v'ena chazrim. So the Gemara says, the correct way to read the Torah is the methodology of klal uprat uklal. Ima aprat mefurish mom shebegaloi uvatam emalachto v'ena chazrim. So the Gemara says, okay, but when even when using klal uprat uklal, what you have to now say is that the examples that are given are you have to look at the nature of the examples that are given. What's the story with the tooth? What's the story with an eye? It detracts from his ability to work. Without now his eye, even one of his eyes, he's now going to be inhibited from doing as good a job. Without a tooth, he's now going to be inhibited from doing as good a job. Without a tooth, he won't be able to eat as well. In other words, it'll prevent him. So maybe the Gemara is saying now that in order for him to go free, it has to not only be an external body part, something which does not regenerate, and also inhibit his ability to work as effectively as before. So the Gemara says, Alama Tanya. But the Gemara says, to that, however, let's go over the following braisa. Talish bezikna v'dil debo etzem, eved yotze behem lecheres. If you were to pull on the Evah Kenani's beard, and in doing so dislocate his jaw, so the Gemara says he's going to go free. Now, he's going to go free, now even with a dislocated jaw, he could still work. I understand, it's not good what's happening. We're just discussing the threshold of what is going to provide him his freedom. So, so a dislocation of a jaw, he still will be able to eat. It's interesting. The Gemara assumes that won't be as bad as a loss of a tooth. Loss of a tooth really inhibits his ability to eat and therefore work. Dislocated jaw, okay. So the Gemara says, so, and why should that be? Meaning, didn't the examples being provided for us tell us that in order to gain freedom, you have to have an injury which is going to inhibit his ability to work? So the Gemara says, L'chafshi shachanu ribui hu. So the Gemara says that the L'chafshi shachanu is a ribui. It's an inclusionary term, which means that even in this scenario, he's going to go free. The ribui hu afilu hikali yado v'tzimsa v'sofa l'achzo nami. So the Gemara says, okay, but let's say you hit the Evah Kenani's hand. And right now, it's temporarily incapacitated. But it's the kind of wound which is going to heal. You broke a bone, it'll heal. So the Gemara says, Alam Atanya, meanwhile we learned, Hikal Yadovit Simsa, Vesofa Lachzer, Ein Eved Yosef Balacheres. If it's a kind of break where it's going to heal, so he doesn't go free. Well, why not? Im Kein Shein V'ayin Mayahanile. The Gemara says, because the Torah was very clear, the example Shein V'ayin. Shein V'ayin are things which are irreplaceable. The knocking out of an eye, the knocking out of the tooth, neither are going to grow back. If it's the kind of wound where even though it's going to create a temporary incapacitation, as long as it's going to heal, he does not gain his freedom. Tana Rabban Bekulam Eved Yosef Ben Lecheres V'Tzarek Yesh Shechor Divrei Rabbi Shimon. As I mentioned in the beginning, and now the Gemara has the discussion, is it that Shein V'Ayin or any of the extremities being knocked out are going to immediately cause his freedom? Or on top of that, the owner also has to write to get shechur. To which the Gemara now brings down a major debate. So let's go. B'kulam eved Yosef ben lecheres v'tzarech get shechur, div Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says a get shechur has to be written. Rabbi Meir omer eino tzarech. Rabbi Meir says no. Rabbi Elazar omer tzarech. Rabbi Tarfon omer eino tzarech. Rabbi Kiva omer tzarech. I say major debate. Okay. A lot of Tanaim weigh in on this issue. Hamachrim lufnei chachamim omrim, and there are the machrim. The machriyim are basically those that create some sort of middle-of-the-road approach. How do you have a middle of the road approach over here?
There's so many generations to argue with. Like Rav Meir is the youngest. How could you be arguing?
And he was the Talmud of Rabbi Akiva.
Right.
But the Gemara tells us elsewhere. Just I can't answer every one of the questions, but we know Rav Meir had two Rebbeim in the course of his life, in his lifetime. If I remember correctly, I think Rav Yehuda ben Bava was his other Rebbe. So he had, you know, so he had different Masoras to operate with. But okay, Niren Divrei Rabbi Tarfon B'Shein V'Ayin Shatar Zach Zolo V'Divrei Rabbi Kiva B'Shari Varim Hol V'Kanos Chachamim Hu. So the Gemara draws the following middle of the road approach, kind of like a compromise. If the what was knocked out of the Eved Kanani was Shein V'Ayin, that creates immediate emancipation, because those are the two that are written in the Torah. However, if any other of the limbs that are knocked out, which qualifies for his freedom, like we just discussed in the Gemara, so then he's going to go free, but the Eved, I'm sorry, but Rabbo has to write a Get Shechor. And the Gemara's response is, why? Because that's a Kanas. That was a punitive fine. To which the Gemara says, what just happened over here? Knasu, cry kadashinan. We just went through drasha. And we know, as a basic yesod, and when you have halachas that are extracted through Yud Gimel Midrash, Shatar Nidreshes Bahem, they're dinei d'oraisa. They're not dinei d'rabbanan. So what just happened over here where the Gemara says, well, Rashi Evarim, that's just a knas d'rabbanan. It's not a knas d'rabbanan. So the Gemara says, Elohol umidrash chachamim hu. So the Gemara says, yeah, it's Medrash Chachamim. Now, Medrash Chachamim means that it's drasha. Now, why then? Let's ask the simple question. Shein V'Ayin is Minotaur. Rashi Evarim is also Minotaur, just extracted through the using of drush. So, how does the compromise work? If Shein V'Ayin was knocked out, okay, immediately goes free, you don't have to run a Mishar Get Shechor. But if Rashi Evarim were knocked out, well, I know it's also Daraisa, but there you do have to write a Get Shechor because it was not through drush. Okay, I kind of know what we're saying, but what's the reason behind that? So Tosfos over here writes, he thinks the Pshat in the Gemara goes like this. Shein V'Ayin, everybody knows. Because you go to Shul, you listen to Chumash, right? Your Mar B'Sedra. In other words, you know the Chumash. Okay. So Shein V'Ayin, everybody knows. So that creates an immediate emancipation. But Rashi Evarim, so you have to come to the daf in order to know Rashi Evarim. Meaning that's a drasha. Right? It's part of Torah Shabbat Peh, but not everybody knows about it. Since not everybody knows about it, so this Eved Kanani, I see him walking around. Why is he free? Right? He knocked out a thumb, right? Knocked off his finger, knocked out a toe. Okay. But I understand, but that's not in the Torah. So that's why it says Tosos, yes. That's why you need to get Shechor, because maybe not everybody knows the distinction between, not the distinction, but the limud of Rashi Prakim. Tosos says that's the pshat in the Gemara. There are other ways to say over the Gemara, but on the daf, that's what you have. Okay, let's stop over here. Almost caught up. Okay, today we finished up the discussion of how exactly an Eved Kanani goes free using either Kesef or Shtar, Machlokas Rav Meir and the Chachamim, based on real basic yesodos in terms of whether the freedom is a chov or zechus, whether or not you can give money to an Eved Kanani to the exclusion of his owner. The Gemara notes that by Maaser Sheni, it seems to be that Rav Meir and the Chachamim's positions are flipped. Abayi says just flip it back. The Rava says don't flip it back, just learn the Tosefta differently. And then we went on to discuss today the halachas of Shein V'Ayin. Shein V'Ayin create an immediate release. We talked today about how to darshan the Pesukim using the methodology of Klal Prado Klal, although it's a little more complicated because the Gemara ends up saying it also falls a little bit more into the category of Ribui. And then what we discussed today is, on top of Shein V'Ayin, do you also need to write a Get Shechor, Machlokas Tanayim? The compromise was for Shein V'Ayin, you do not need to write Get Shechor. For Rashi Evarim, you do need to write Get Shechor.